past him, Mara saw Sabaoth take a hasty backward step of his own. The clone hit the floor and charged, lightsaber still slashing toward Skywalker in wide horizontal arcs. Skywalker continued to give way, apparently unaware that he was backing toward the solid rock wall, against which he would be trapped. They passed by, and Mara looked over to find Sabaoth once again gazing at her.
"As I said, Mara Jade," he said, "inevitable. And with you and Skywalker beside me, the lesser peoples of the galaxy will flock to us like leaves in the wind. Their hearts and their souls will be ours."
He looked across the room and beckoned. Still crouching behind the catwalk wreckage, Card jerked in surprise as his blaster rose from his holster and shot through the air toward Sabaoth. Halfway there, it was joined by Organa Solo's dropped lightsaber, and the blaster Solo was still doggedly trying to chase down.
"As will their insignificant weapons," Sabaoth added.
Holding a negligent hand out to receive them, he turned his eyes back to the duel about to play itself to its conclusion. It was the chance Mara had been waiting for, possibly the last chance she would ever have. Reaching through the chaos surrounding her mind, she stretched out to the Force, focusing her eyes and mind on the weapons flying across the room toward Sabaoth's hand. She felt his inattentive control snap, and Organa Solo's lightsaber arced away from the blasters to land firmly in her hand. Sabaoth spun back to face her, the blasters falling with a clatter onto the stairway.
"No!"
he screamed, his face twisted horribly with fear, confusion, and dread. Mara felt his sudden frantic tug fumbling at the lightsaber, but it too was twisted with confusion and dread, and this time he didn't have surprise on his side. Given time, he would recover from the shock, but Mara had no intention of giving him that time. Igniting the lightsaber, she charged. The clone must have heard her coming, of course. The distinctive sound of her lightsaber made that inevitable. But with Skywalker backed up against the wall, the temptation to finish off one opponent first was too great to resist. He swung one last time, his lightsaber slashing into the wall as Skywalker ducked low beneath the blade. And with a brilliant flash of shattered electronics, the wall exploded outward, over Skywalker's head and directly into the clone's face. Skywalker hadn't been backing into a wall after all. He'd been backing into one of the throne room's view screens. The clone shrieked, the first sound Mara could remember hearing him make, as he staggered backward. He spun toward the sound of her lightsaber, his face twisted with anger and fear, his eyes still dazzled. He raised his lightsaber to attack.
"You will kill Luke Skywalker."
She ducked beneath the slashing blade, gazing into his face. Skywalker's face. The face that had haunted her nightmares for nearly 6 years. The face the Emperor had ordered her to destroy.
"You will kill Luke Skywalker."
And for the first time since she'd found Skywalker and his crippled X-Wing floating in deep space, she let herself give in to the voice swirling through her mind. With all her strength, she swung her lightsaber and cut him down. The clone crumpled, his lightsaber clattering to the floor beside him. Mara gazed down at him, and as she took a ragged breath, the voice in the back of her mind fell silent. It was done. She had fulfilled the Emperor's last command, and she was finally free.
Chapter 28.
"That appears to be all of them, Captain," Thrawn said, gazing out the bridge viewport at the Rebel warships spread out along the edges of the Interdictor Cruiser's gravity cones. "Instruct the Constrainer and Sentinel to secure from entrapment duty and return to their positions in the demarcation line. All warships prepare to engage the enemy."
"Yes, sir,"
Pelion said, shaking his head in silent wonder as he keyed in the orders. Once again, against overwhelming evidence to the contrary, the Grand Admiral had proved himself right. The Rebel assault fleet was here. and probably wondering at this very moment what had gone wrong with their clever little scheme.
"It occurs to me, Admiral, that we might not want to destroy all of them,"
he suggested.
"Someone should be allowed to return to Coruscant to tell them how badly they were outsmarted."
"I agree, Captain," Thrawn said, "though I doubt that will be their interpretation. More likely they'll conclude instead that they were betrayed."
"Probably,"
Pellion agreed, throwing a quick look around the bridge. He'd thought he'd heard a faint sound just then. Something like an overstressed bearing or someone rumbling in the back of his throat. He listened closely, but the sound wasn't repeated.
"Though that would work equally well to our advantage."
"Indeed," Thrawn said. "Shall we designate Admiral Akbar's Star Cruiser for messenger duty?" Pellion smiled tightly. Akbar, who just barely survived Counselor Borsk Faelia's previous accusations of incompetence and treason over the operation at the Sluis Van shipyards. This time, he wouldn't be so lucky.
"A nice touch, Admiral," he said.
"Thank you, Captain."
Pellion glanced up at Rook, standing silent guard behind Thrawn's chair, and wondered if the Nogri appreciated the irony of it all. Given the species' lack of sophistication, probably not. Ahead, space was filling with flashes of laser fire as the opposing starfighter squadrons began to engage. Settling himself comfortably in his chair, Pellion glanced over his displays and prepared his mind for battle. For battle, and for victory.
"Watch it, Rogue Leader. You've picked up a couple of tails."
The voice of Rogue Two came in Wedge's ear.
"Rogue Six? Right with you, Rogue Two,"
the other confirmed.
"Double chop on three. One, two..."
Bracing himself, Wedge threw his X-Wing into a wild scissors roll. The two TIE fighters, trying to match his maneuver, while at the same time not overshooting him, probably never even saw the other two X-Wings drop into position behind them. Two messy explosions later, Wedge was clear.
"Thanks," he said.
"No problem. What now?"
"I don't know,"
he admitted, taking a quick look at the battle raging around them. So far, Admiral Akbar was still holding his star cruisers together in combat formation. But the way the periphery support ships were being hammered by the Imperials, the whole thing could dissolve into the mass confusion of a brawl at any minute. In which event, the starfighter squadrons would be basically on their own, hitting wherever and whatever they could. Which they were, for all practical purposes, doing now, anyway. The trick would be to find something really effective to hit. Rogue Two must have followed the same reasoning.
"You know, Rogue Leader, it occurs to me that those Imperials wouldn't have so many ships available to pound us with if they had to protect their shipyard at the same time."
Wedge craned his neck to look at the blaze of lights off in the near distance. Silhouetted against them, he could make out the dark, brooding outlines of at least four Golan II battle stations.
"Agreed," he said. "But I think it would take more than an attack by even the legendary Rogue Squadron to make them that nervous."
"Commander Antilles, this is Fleet Central Communications,"
a brisk voice cut in.
"I have a signal coded urgent coming in for you under a New Republic diplomatic encrypt. Do you want to bother with it?"
Wedge blinked. "A diplomatic encrypt? Way out here?" "I suppose so. Sure, put it through."
"Yes, sir."
There was a click.
"Hello, Antilles,"
a vaguely familiar voice said dryly in his ear.
"Nice to see you again."
"The feeling's mutual, I'm sure,"
Wedge said, frowning.
"Who is this?"
"Aw, come on now. Have you forgotten already those wonderful times we spent together outside the Mumbry Storv Cantina?"
"The Mumbry Storv Aves?"
"Hey, very good,"
Aves said.
"Your memory's getting better."
"You people are starting to be hard to forget," Wedge told him. "Where are you?"
"Right smack in the middle of that big blaze of Imperial lights off on your flank. I wish you'd told me you were hitting this place instead of Tangreen, like we thought."
"I wish you'd told me what that little job of yours was all about," Wedge countered. "Did a good job of fooling each other, didn't we?"
"Sure did. Fooled everybody except the Grand Admiral."
"Tell me about it. So is this just a social call or what?"
"It could be," Or it couldn't. See, in about 90 seconds, some of us are going to make a grab for the CGT array we came here to get. After that, it's a quick goodbye, and we punch our way out.
Punching their way out from an Imperial shipyard. And he made it sound so easy, too.
Good luck.
Thanks. The reason I mention it is that it doesn't matter much to us which direction we pick to punch through. Thought it might make a difference to you.
Wedge felt a tight smile tugging at his lip.
It might at that. Like, say, if you were to come out near those Golan IIs out there? Maybe hitting them a little from behind on the way?
Looks like a good route to me. Of course, it'll get nasty outside the perimeter. All those ships and things taking pot shots and all. I don't suppose you could find a way to give us a friendly escort from that point on.
Wedge looked over at the lights, thinking it over. It could work all right. If Aves' people were able to knock out even one of those Golan IIs, it would open up the shipyard to a new Republic incursion. Unless the Imperials were willing to sacrifice it, they would have to shift some of their battle force over there to close the puncture and chase down any ships that had gotten in. And from the smuggler's point of view, having an influx of new Republic warships to sneak through on their way out would give them better cover than they would get anywhere else along the perimeter. All in all, a pretty fair exchange.
You've got a deal, he told Aves. Give me a couple minutes and I'll get that escort arranged.
A friendly escort, don't forget. If you know what I mean.
I know exactly what you mean,
Wedge assured him. The traditional Mon Calamari loathing for smugglers and smuggling was the stuff of wardroom legend, and Wedge didn't want to get caught in the middle of that any more than Aves did. Probably why the smuggler had come to him instead of offering his assistance to Akbar and the fleet commanders directly.
Don't worry, I've got it covered.
Okay. Whoops. There goes the first charge. See ya.
The comm clicked off.
We're going in?
Rogue 11 asked.
We're going in,
Wedge confirmed, bringing his X-Wing around in a tight starboard turn.
Rogue 2, give command a quick update and tell them we need some support. Don't mention Aves by name. Just tell them we're coordinating with an independent resistance group inside the shipyards.
Got it, Rogue Leader.
What if Akbar doesn't want to risk it?
Rogue 7 put in. Wedge looked out at the lights of the shipyard. So once again, as it had so many times before, it was all going to come down to a matter of trust. Trust in a farm kid, fresh off a backward desert world, to lead him in an attack on the first Death Star. Trust in a former high-stakes gambler, who might or might not have had any real combat experience, to lead him in an attack on the second Death Star. And now, trust in a smuggler who might just as easily betray him for the right price.
It doesn't matter, he said. With or without support, we're going in.
Mara's lightsaber flashed, slicing viciously through the clone, the Ook. The clone fell, its lightsaber clattering to the floor, and lay still. And suddenly, the buzzing pressure in Luke's mind was gone. He rose to his feet in front of the still sparking viewscreen he'd lured the clone to, taking what felt like the first clean breath he'd had in hours.
The ordeal was finally over. Thank you,
he said quietly to Mara. She took a step back from the dead clone.
No problem. Brain all clear now?
So she'd been able to sense the buzzing in his mind. He'd wondered about that.
Yes,
he nodded, taking another wonderfully clean breath.
How about yours?
She threw him a look that was half amused, half ironic. But for the first time since they'd met, he could see that the pain and hatred were gone from her eyes.
I did what he wanted me to,
she said.
It's over.
Luke looked back across the throne room. Card had tied the Vornskr's leashes to the collapsed catwalk and was picking his way carefully across the wreckage. Han, on his feet now, was helping a still groggy Leia out from under the section that had fallen on her.
Leia! Luke called. You all right?
I'm fine,
Leia called back.
Just a little banged up. Let's get out of here, all right?
Luke turned back to Sabaoth. The old Jedi was staring down at the dead clone, his hands working at his sides,
his eyes furious and lost and insane.
Yes, he agreed.
Come on, Mara.
Go ahead, Mara said. I'll be with you in a minute.
Luke eyed her.
What are you going to do?
What do you think? She retorted. I'm going to finish the job, like I should have done on Jomark.
Slowly, Sabaoth raised his eyes to her.
You will die for this, Mara Jade, he said, his quiet voice more chilling than any outburst of rage could have been. Slowly and in great pain.
Taking a deep breath, curling his hands into fists in front of his chest, he closed his eyes.
We'll see about that,
Mara muttered. Raising her lightsaber, she started toward him. It began as a distant rumble, more felt than really heard. Luke looked around the room, senses tingling with a premonition of danger, but he could see nothing out of place. The sound grew louder, deeper, and with a thunderous explosion, the sections of throne room ceiling directly above him and Mara suddenly collapsed in a downpour of gravel-sized rocks. Look out! Luke shouted, throwing his arms up to protect his head and trying to leap out of the way. But the center of the rockfall moved with him. He tried again, this time nearly losing his balance as his foot caught in a pile of stones already ankle deep. Too numerous and too small for him to get a grip on through the force, they kept coming, pummeling against him with bruising impact. Through the dust swirling around him, he saw Mara floundering under a deluge of her own, trying to guard her head with one arm as she slashed vainly at the falling stones with her lightsaber. From across the throne room, Luke could hear Han shouting something and guessed that they too were under the same attack. And standing untouched by the destructive rock storms he'd unleashed, Sabaoth lifted his hands high.
I am the Jedi Master Sabaoth, he shouted,
his voice ringing through the throne room and the roar of the rock falls.
The Empire, the universe, is mine!
Luke dropped his lightsaber back into defense position, senses again tingling with danger. But once again, the knowledge did him little good. Sabaoth's lightning burst flashed against the lightsaber blade, the impact knocking Luke off balance and dropping him painfully onto his knees in the pile of stones around him. Even as he struggled to get up, one of the falling rocks slammed hard into the side of his head. He staggered, toppling sideways onto one hand. Again, the lightning flashed, throwing coronal fire all through the stone pile and sending wave after wave of agony through him. The lightsaber was plucked from his fingers. Dimly, he saw it fly over the railing toward the far end of the throne room.
Stop it!
Mara screamed. Through the haze of pain, Luke saw that she was standing up to her knees in stones, her lightsaber slashing uselessly through the mound as if trying to sweep them away.
If you're going to kill us, just do it!
Patience, my future apprentice,
Sabaoth said. And squinting through the stones and dust, Luke saw the other's dreamy smile.
You cannot die yet. Not until I have taken you down to the Grand Admiral's cloning chamber.
Beneath her rockfall, Mara jerked, her sense flashing with sudden horror.
What?
For I have foreseen that Mara Jade will kneel before me,
Sabaoth reminded her.
One Mara Jade, or another.
That's it, Lando said, tapping the activation switch on the last charge. Give it a kick and let's get out of here.
From around the central column, Chewbacca growled acknowledgement. Picking up his blaster, Lando stood up, giving each of the doors around the outer walkway a quick look. So far, so good. If they could keep the stormtroopers out for just 2 more minutes, long enough for Chewbacca and him to get off this work platform and out to the walkway... Chewbacca rumbled a warning. Listening closely, Lando could hear the faint rising pitch hum of an extremely unhappy negative flow coupler.
Great, Chewie, he said. Let's go.
He stepped out onto the end of the bridge. Straight ahead of him, the door opposite the bridge blew up.
Watch it! Lando barked,
dropping flat on his stomach on the bridge and pouring blaster fire into the cloud of dust and debris expanding out from where the door had been. Already, the sizzling blue ripples of stun fire were starting to erupt from the doorway in their general direction. Behind him, the roar of Chewbacca's bowcaster was answering. So much for those last 2 minutes. And with his face pressed as close to the metal mesh floor as he could get it, Lando found himself looking at the bridge. At the bridge, and the thin but sturdy guardrails running along both sides of it. It was crazy, but that didn't mean it wouldn't work.
Chewie, get over here!
He called, rolling halfway over and throwing a quick look up at the bridge controls set into the top of the work platform guardrail.
Extension control... there. Retraction control. Emergency stop control.
The bridge shook as Chewbacca landed with a thud on the bridge beside him.
Keep them busy, Lando told him.
Gauging the distance, he lunged upward, jabbing the retraction control and the emergency stop in quick succession.
The bridge lurched out from the work platform and stopped, just far enough for its locking bars to disengage.
Chewbacca rumbled a question as the bridge bobbed gently with the strain of their weight.
You'll see, Lando told him.
From both sides came flashes of light as two more doors disintegrated.
Just hang on to the guardrail supports and keep firing. Here we go.
Getting a firm grip himself, he aimed carefully and opened fire. But not at the stormtroopers now charging out onto the circular walkway. His shots were directed instead at the far end of the bridge, throwing out clouds of sparks as they vaporized sections of the mesh flooring and dug chunks out of the structural support bars beneath. The bridge lurched, bobbing even harder now, as Lando continued to hammer away at its structural integrity. Beside him, Chewbacca rumbled a savage Wookiee phrase that Lando had never heard him use before. And with a horrible shriek of strained metal, the bridge suddenly gave way. Connected to the walkway only by the still intact guardrails, it pivoted ponderously downward. Lando gripped the guardrail tightly as their horizontal position changed rapidly toward a vertical one. And with a crash that nearly jarred him loose, the bridge slammed up against the guardrail of the cloning balcony 3 levels down.
This is our stop, Lando said. Come on.
Jamming his blaster awkwardly into its holster, he swung himself around the steeply angled bridge guardrail to drop onto the cloning balcony floor. Chewbacca, with his natural arboreal skills, was there a good 3 seconds ahead of him. They were halfway to the balcony's exit door, dodging between the rows of Spa-Arty cylinders, when the column behind them blew up. The charges went first, blowing sections of cable and pipework in a series of dazzling fireballs all around the column's perimeter. An evil-looking cloud of smoke and dust and flash-vaporized nutrient liquids swirled into the air, obscuring the view from all sides. Multicolored fluids began spraying out. The work platform they'd been standing on a minute earlier broke free of its supports and slid roughly down the column, tearing and damaging more equipment as it fell. From inside the cloud came a sputtering of shorted power lines and secondary explosions, each one adding to the rain of debris. And with a horrible creaking of strained and shattered supports, the external layers of the column began to peel away and fall almost leisurely outward. Over the din, Chewbacca roared a warning.
Me neither, Lando shouted back. Let's get out of here.
10 seconds later, bursting past the single token guard who'd been left on this level's exit door, they were out. They were 2 corridors away when they felt the distant vibrations as the column crashed to the cloning cavern floor.
Okay, Lando panted, pausing and glancing both ways as they reached a cross corridor.
R2 must have done a good job with those troop reassignments. The whole area seemed deserted.
Exit's that direction, he told Chewbacca, pulling out his comlink. We'll call the others and get out of here.
He keyed for Han, and jerked back as the comlink erupted with a loud crackling noise.
Han? He called.
Lando?
Han's voice came back, almost inaudible over the noise.
Right, Lando confirmed. What's happening up there?
This crazy Jedi's dropping the roof on us. Leia and me have a little cover, but he's got Luke and Mara out in the open. Where are you?
Down near the cloning cavern,
Lando gritted. If that arrhythmic resonance thing of Chewbacca's worked, one of the mountain's reactors would already be starting to flicker with instabilities. If they didn't get out of the mountain before it blew...
You want us to come up and help?
Don't bother.
Card's voice cut in grimly.
There's already a large pile of stone in front of the turbo lift. Looks like we're here for the duration.
Chewbacca snarled, his voice filled with frustration.
Forget it, Chewie. There's nothing you can do anyway. We've still got Luke and Mara. Maybe they can stop him.
What if they can't?
Lando demanded, stomach twisting inside him.
Look, you haven't got much time. We think we've got an arrhythmic resonance going in the power core.
Good. Means Sabaoth won't get out either.
Han!
Go on, get out of here. Chewie, it's been great. But if we don't make it, someone beside Winter's gonna have to take care of Jason and Jaina. You got that?
The wild card's waiting where you came in.
Card added.
They'll be expecting you.
Right. Lando said, gritting his teeth. Good luck.
He keyed off and jammed the comlink back in his belt. Han was right. There wasn't anything they could do against Sabaoth from down here. But with the wild card's turbo lasers and R2's set of floor plans...
Come on, Chewie, he said,
turning toward their exit and breaking into a run. It's not over yet.
Perhaps it's for the best,
Sabaoth murmured, gazing at Luke sadly as he stepped toward him. Blinking the dust away from his eyes, Luke looked up at the old Jedi, trying to force back the agony still throbbing through him. The agony and the looming sense of defeat. Kneeling on the floor, encased in stones to above his waist with more still falling on him, facing an insane Jedi Master who wanted to kill him. No. A Jedi must act when he is calm, at peace with the Force.
Master Sabaoth, listen to me, he said. You're not well. I know that. But I can help you.
A dozen expressions flickered across Sabaoth's face, as if he were trying various emotions on for size.
Can you now?
He said, settling on wry amusement.
And why would you do that for me?
Because you need it,
Luke said.
And because we need you. You have a vast store of experience and power that you could use for the good of the New Republic.
Sabaoth snorted.
The Jedi Master Joruis Sabaoth does not serve lesser peoples, Jedi Skywalker.
Why not? All the great Jedi Masters of the Old Republic did.
And that was their failing,
Sabaoth said, jabbing a finger at Luke.
That was why the lesser peoples rose up and killed them.
But they didn't.
Enough!
Sabaoth thundered.
It doesn't matter what you think the lesser peoples need from me. I am the one who will decide that. They will accept my rule, or they will die.
His eyes flashed.
You had that choice, Jedi Skywalker. And more. You could have ruled beside me. Instead, you chose death.
A drop of sweat or blood trickled down the side of Luke's face.
What about Mara?
Sabaoth shook his head.
Mara Jade is no longer any concern of yours,
he said.
I will deal with her later.
No!
Mara snapped.
You will deal with me now!
Luke looked over at her. The stones were still raining down above her head, but to his astonishment, the knee-high pile of rock that had been trapping her in place was gone. And now he saw why. Those lightsaber slashes she'd been making earlier hadn't been the useless sweeping motions that he'd assumed. Instead, she'd been slicing huge gashes in the floor, releasing the stones to drain through to the monitor area below. Raising her lightsaber, she charged. Sabaoth swung around to face her, his face contorted with rage.
No!
He screamed, and again the blue-white lightning crackled from his fingertips. Mara caught the burst on her lightsaber, her mad rush faltering as coronal fire burned all around her. Sabaoth fired again and again, backing toward the throne and the solid wall behind it. Doggedly, Mara kept coming. Abruptly, the rockfall over her head ceased. From the edge of the pile that had half-buried Luke,
Stones began flying towards Sabaoth. Curving around behind him, they shot straight into Mara's face. She staggered backward, squeezing her eyes shut against the hailstorm and throwing up her right elbow to try to block them away. Setting his teeth, Luke tried to heave away the stones weighing him down. He couldn't leave Mara to fight alone. But it was no use. His muscles were still too weakened from Sabaoth's last attack. He tried again anyway, ignoring the fresh pain the effort sent through him. He looked at Mara and saw her face suddenly change. He frowned, and then he heard it too. Leia's voice speaking in his mind. "Keep your eyes closed, Mara, and listen to my voice. I can see. I'll guide you."
"No!"
Sabaoth screamed again.
"No! She is mine!"
Luke looked over at the other end of the throne room, wondering how Sabaoth would lash out at Leia in retaliation. But there was nothing. Even the stones had stopped falling on the section of catwalk they were all huddled beneath. Perhaps the long battle had finally begun to drain Sabaoth's strength, and he could no longer risk splitting his attention. Beyond the catwalk, lying half buried in the pile of stone that now blocked the turbolift door, Luke spotted the metallic glint of his lightsaber. If he could call it to him and regain enough strength to join Mara's battle. And then, another motion caught his eye. Tied to the catwalk to one side, untouched by the rockfall that had attacked their owner, Card's pet Vornskers were tugging at their leashes, straining toward Mara and toward Sabaoth. A wild Vornsker had nearly killed Mara during their trek through the Murker Forest. It seemed only fitting, somehow, for these two to help save her. The lightsaber stirred under Luke's call, igniting as his mind found the control. It rolled off the rock pile, the brilliant green blade throwing sparks from the stones as it bounced across them. Luke strained, and the weapon lifted into the air and flew toward him. And as it reached the ruined catwalk, he let the blade dip to slice neatly through the Vornsker's leashes. Sabaoth saw them coming, of course. His back nearly to the throne room wall now, he shifted his aim, sending a burst of lightning toward the charging predators as they came up over the stairway. One of them howled and fell to the floor, skidding across the scattered stones. The other staggered, but kept coming. The distraction was all the opening Mara needed. She leaped forward against the rock still pummeling against her face, covering the last remaining distance between her and Sabaoth. And as he brought his hands desperately back toward her, she dropped onto her knees in front of him and stabbed viciously upward with her lightsaber. With a last mournful scream, Sabaoth crumpled. And as it had with the Emperor aboard the Death Star, the dark side energy within him burst out in a violent explosion of blue fire. Luke was ready. Throwing every last bit of strength into the effort, he caught Mara in a solid force grip, pulling her back away from that burst of energy as fast as he could. He felt the wave front slam into him, felt the slight easing of stress as Leia's strength joined his effort. And then, suddenly, it was all over. For a long minute, he lay still, gasping for air, fighting against the unconsciousness threatening to roll over him. Dimly, he felt the stones being pushed away from around him.
"Are you all right, Luke?" Leia asked.
He forced open his eyes. Dust-covered and bruised, she didn't look much better than he felt.
"I'm fine,"
he told her, pushing against the remaining stones and getting his feet under him.
"How about the others?" "They're not too bad,"
she said, catching his arm to help steady him.
"But Han's going to need medical treatment. He's got some bad burns."
"So does Mara," Card said grimly, coming up the steps holding an unconscious Mara in his hands. "We have to get her to the wild card as quickly as possible."
"So give them a call,"
Han said. He was kneeling over the dead Luuk clone, gazing down at him.
"Tell them to come pick us up."
"Pick us up where?" Card frowned. Han pointed toward the spot where Sabaoth had died.
"Right there."
Luke turned and looked. The massive detonation of dark side energy had made a shambles of that end of the throne room. The walls and ceiling were blackened and cratered. The metal of the floor where Sabaoth had stood was buckled and half melted.
The throne itself had been ripped away and was lying smoldering a meter from its base. And behind it, through a jagged crack in the rear wall, he could see the bright twinkle of a single star.
Right,
Luke said, taking a deep breath.
Leia? I see it,
she nodded, handing him his lightsaber and igniting hers.
Let's get busy.
The two Rebel assault frigates broke to either side of the beleaguered Golan II, delivering massive broadsides as they veered off. A section of the battle station flared and went dark, and against its darkened bulk, another wave of Rebel starfighters could be seen slipping past into the shipyards beyond. And Pelion was no longer smiling.
Don't panic, Captain, Thrawn said,
but he too was starting to sound grim.
We're not defeated yet. Not by a long shot.
Pelion's board pinged. He looked at it.
Sir, we have a priority message coming in from Wayland,
he told Thrawn, his stomach twisting with a sudden horrible premonition.
Wayland, the cloning facility.
Read it, Captain, Thrawn said, his voice deadly quiet. The crypt is coming in now, sir,
Pelion said, tapping the board impatiently as the message slowly began to come up. It was exactly as he'd feared.
The mountain is under attack, sir,
he told Thrawn.
Two different forces of natives, plus some rebel saboteurs.
He broke off, frowning in disbelief.
And a group of Nogri.
He never got to read any more of the report. Abruptly, a gray-skinned hand slashed out of nowhere, catching him across the throat. He gagged, falling limply in his chair, his whole body instantly paralyzed.
For the treachery of the Empire against the Nogri people,
Rook's voice said quietly from beside him as he gasped for breath.
We were betrayed. We have been revenged.
There was a whisper of movement, and he was gone. Still gasping, struggling against the inertia of his stunned muscles, Pelion fought to get a hand up to his command board. With one final effort, he made it, trying twice before he was able to hit the emergency alert. And as the wailing of the alarm cut through the noise of a Star Destroyer at battle, he finally managed to turn his head. Thrawn was sitting upright in his chair, his face strangely calm. In the middle of his chest, a dark red stain was spreading across the spotless white of his Grand Admiral's uniform. Glittering in the center of the stain was the tip of Rook's assassin's knife. Thrawn caught his eye, and to Pelion's astonishment, the Grand Admiral smiled.
But, he whispered, it was so artistically done.
The smile faded. The glow in his eyes did likewise. And Thrawn, the last Grand Admiral, was gone.
Captain Pelion!
The comm officer called urgently as the medic team arrived. Too late to the Grand Admiral's chair.
The Nemesis and Stormhawk are requesting orders. What shall I tell them?
Pelion looked up at the viewports, at the chaos that had erupted behind the defenses of the supposedly secure shipyards, at the unexpected need to split his forces to its defense, at the rebel fleet taking full advantage of the diversion. In the blink of an eye, the universe had suddenly turned against them. Thrawn could still have pulled an Imperial victory out of it. But he, Pelion, was not Thrawn.
Signal to all ships!
he rasped. The words ached in his throat, in a way that had nothing to do with the throbbing pain of Rook's treacherous attack.
Prepare to retreat.
Chapter 29.
The sun had set beneath a thin layer of western clouds, and the colors of the evening sky were beginning to fade into the encroaching darkness of Coruscant night. Leaning on the chest-high wrought stone railing at the edge of the palace roof, listening to the breezes whispering by her ears, Mara gazed out at the lights and vehicles of the Imperial City below. Buzzing with activity, there was still something strangely peaceful about it. Or maybe the peace was in her. Either way, it made for a nice change. 20 meters behind her, the door out onto the roof opened,
She stretched out with the force, but she knew who it had to be.
And she was right.
Mara, Luke called softly.
Over here,
she called back, grimacing out at the city below. From his sense, she could tell he was here for her answer. So much for inner peace. Quite a view, isn't it? Luke commented, coming up beside her and gazing out over the city.
Must bring back memories for you.
She threw him a patient look.
Translation? How am I feeling about the homecoming this time? You know, Skywalker, just between us, you're pretty pathetic when you try to be devious. If I were you, I'd give it up and just stick with that straight-out farm boy honesty.
Sorry, he said. Too much time spent around Han, I guess.
And Card and me, I suppose?
You want a straight-out farm boy honest answer to that?
She threw him a crooked smile.
I'm sorry I even brought it up.
Luke smiled back, then turned serious again.
So how are you feeling?
Mara looked back out at the lights.
Strange,
she told him.
It's sort of like coming home, only it isn't. I've never really stood here and just looked at the city like this. The only times I was ever up here were to watch for a certain airspeeder to arrive, or to keep an eye on some particular building or something like that. Business for the Emperor. I don't think he ever saw the Imperial City as people and lights. To him it was just power and opportunities.
Probably how he saw everything, Luke agreed. And speaking about opportunities,
Mara grimaced.
She'd been right. He was here for her answer. The whole thing's ridiculous,
she said.
You know it and I know it.
Card doesn't think so.
Card's even a worse idealist than you are sometimes,
she shot back.
In the first place, he's never going to be able to hold this smuggler coalition of his together.
Maybe not, Luke said. But think of the possibilities if he can. There are a lot of contacts and information sources out there in the fringe that the New Republic doesn't have any access to at all.
So what do you need information sources for?
Mara countered.
Thrawn's dead. His cloning center is a shambles, and the Empire's in retreat again. You've won.
We won at Endor, too,
Luke pointed out.
That didn't stop us from years of so-called mopping-up action. There's still a lot of work yet to be done.
It still doesn't make any sense to put me in the middle of it,
Mara argued.
If you want a liaison between you and the smugglers, why don't you get Card to do it?
Because Card's a smuggler. You were just a smuggler's assistant.
She snorted.
Big difference.
To some people it is,
Luke said.
This whole negotiation process is running as much on appearance and image as it is on reality. Anyway, Card's already said he won't do it. Now that those Vornskers of his have recovered, he wants to get back out to his people.
Mara shook her head.
I'm not a politician, she insisted. Not a diplomat either.
But you're someone both sides are willing to trust,
Luke said.
That's what's important here.
Mara made a face.
You don't know these people, Skywalker. Trust me, Chewbacca and the guys you're sending out to transplant the Nogri to their new world are going to have a lot more fun.
He touched her hand.
You can do it, Mara. I know you can.
She sighed.
I have to think about it.
That's all right, he said. Just come on downstairs whenever you're ready.
Sure.
She threw him a sideways look.
Was there something else?
He smiled.
You're getting good at that.
Your fault for teaching me too well. Come on. What is it?
Just this. Reaching into his tunic, he pulled out a lightsaber.
What's this?
Mara asked, frowning.
It's my old lightsaber,
Luke told her quietly.
The one I lost at Cloud City and nearly got killed with at Wayland.
He held it out.
I'd like you to have it.
She looked up at him, startled.
Me? Why?
He shrugged self-consciously.
Lots of reasons. Because you earned it. Because you're on your way to becoming a Jedi and you'll need it. Mostly, though, because I want you to have it.
Slowly,
Almost reluctantly, she took the weapon.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
He touched her hand again. I'll be in the conference room with the others. Come on down when you've decided. He turned and walked away across the palace roof. Mara turned to gaze out at the lights of the city again. The cool metal of the lightsaber pressed against her hand. Luke's lightsaber. Probably one of his last links to the past. And he was giving it away.
Was there a message in that for her?
Probably. Like she'd said, subtlety wasn't one of Luke's strong points. But if that was why he'd done it, he'd been wasting his time. Her last link with the past had been broken in the Mount Tantus throne room. Her past was over. It was time to get on with the future. And the New Republic was that future, whether she liked it or not. Behind her, she heard Luke open the door.
Hang on a minute, she called after him. I'll come with you.
This is Mark Thompson. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of Star Wars, The Last Command by Timothy Zahn. This program was directed by Kevin Thompson, executive producer Aaron Blank. Star Wars, The Last Command is a production of Lucasfilm Limited, copyright 2012, all rights reserved, used under authorization. Music composed by John Williams. Music publishing by Warner Tamerlane Publishing Corporation and Bantha Music. Music master production, copyright 2007, Lucasfilm Limited. This has been a Random House audio presentation. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.